TBRI.
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 TOVD.
TBRI.
TBRI, Trust-Based Relational Intervention.
TBRI is an attachment-based
trauma-informed intervention
that is designed to meet the complex needs
of vulnerable children.
TBRI uses empowering principles
to address physical needs,
connecting principles for attachment needs,
and correcting principles to disarm fear-based behaviors.
While TBRI is based on years of attachment, sensory processing, and neuroscience research,
the heartbeat of TBRI is connection.
Hello and welcome back to the TBRI podcast. On this show, we talk all about trust-based relational intervention, or TBRI. We talk about different elements of the model itself, and also about how TBRI is applied in various systems of care and practice. I'm Emily Pickett, producer of the podcast, and so glad that you are joining us today for part two of our conversation about TBRI and teenagers. If you haven't had the chance to listen to our previous episode with Scott Waters, go ahead and pause this one, go back and listen to our first one, and then meet us back here for this week's conversation. Last week, we sat down with Scott Waters to talk all about the teen brain and how to apply the TBRI empowering and connecting principles with teens. And then today, we're going to dive into the TBRI correcting principles, as well as a really fun and sweet story from Scott at the end of the episode that you're not going to want to miss. So without any further delay, here is the second part of our series on TBRI in teenagers.
Let's chat about correcting.
Oh, yeah.
Where do we even start with this? Because all I know from my early parenting and from my experience of being a teenager with parents was that I better do it the right way or I better expect a consequence. And that was kind of it. Like it was, you do it the right way or something is going to go wrong. How do you approach that differently with teens?
The balance between nurture and structure is so vitally important with teens. We seem to increase the structure to try to hold them close. And all that does is push them further away. And so we have to be really creative when we're doing and offering correction to teens. And we also have to be very, very mindful. They're going to approach correction differently, and we need to approach correction differently. Mm-hmm. I don't do redos with teens.
No.
I'm not going to sit there and walk them through the entire thing. I love Dan Siegel and Tina Payne Bryson's example that they give in No Drama Discipline, which is reviewing with the teen once they're calm and regulated. What happened? What could you have done differently? And what do you need to do to make it right? And having that conversation with teen, I call it the teen redo. Because we can actually walk through that process with them and engage them in that process. And you'd be surprised what they come up with. Sometimes we've got to go through it and kind of walk through it with them a little bit closer than other times. Mm-hmm. But what we're trying to do is make sure that the behavior has changed and that we stay content and they stay content and we stay connected throughout the entire process. And what we're really trying to do is push out that shame. And teens right. are very, very prone to shame. So we got to be careful about that.
So I love what you just said was the three C's of that fall under our correcting principles. So when an incident is said and done, our ultimate goal is that the behavior has changed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which side note means we've actually had to potentially teach them the right way to do this thing. I think we make a lot of assumptions that they know how. And then that we're connected, which that didn't exist in my childhood or in my early parenting, and that we're both content. And I think that's a pretty high bar for parents to get to that place too, that we aren't all frustrated and angry and all of the things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to come back to one thing you just mentioned of teach them the right way to do things. Okay. And this is the point, especially in correction with teens, there is more than one right way to do something. We're more our goal is mainly the result instead of the method. And so I've seen so many parents want to correct the methods instead of the end goal, rather than have this wait and find out approach with what their teens are going through. That's a hill that you don't want to die on, is how a teen or a kiddo for that matter does the thing that you're asking them to do, because it just pushes them away. They just they'll want to hide from you what they do and what their methods are. So we have to rethink a whole lot as parents of teens and really be on our toes.
I feel like you just held a mirror right up to me, Scott, because my youngest is learning how to cook like a whole meal right now. And I was just sitting back observing the other day, and I thought, I'm going to lose my mind the way this is going down right here, because like that doesn't look like a very good idea. And then the meal was way better than anything I have prepared. And so thanks for reminding me of that, because I think it is interesting to think about. Sometimes I just want things to be done, like just get it done. And I know this way works because I've been doing it this way for a really long time. But really, when we allow them the space and the freedom to be creative and to be curious and to figure out how they're going to get to the other side of this task, sometimes it's better for all of us. Not always, but yeah.
Well, and you look at the four indicators of secure attachment from Jude Cassidy's Truth, Lies, and Intimacy. And we focus a lot on these in nurture groups. Mm-hmm. And what we're teaching our kids throughout anything is the giving care and the receiving care part, but also that autonomous self. And so when you start correcting the methods versus the end result, that's when you start to mess with their autonomy. They don't need to be a little use. They need to be their own person.
Right.
And that's a way for us to give them voice and to express themselves. And if the dinner doesn't come out right, and you've got the burnt rolls and the cold green beans, you know, they're going to know.
Right.
But we can also guide them after it's done and go, okay, what could you have done differently next time? And help explore different ways to do it.
Yeah.
We learn through trial and error, and they need to have that opportunity as well.
So I think what you just said, Scott, is essentially, and stick with me, a missed opportunity for shame, right? So when we go into things, we have to be so cautious. And you mentioned their belief system earlier. We have to be so cautious because these kids are fragile. A teenager in general is a fragile human being. And so I love that you say, you know, we have an opportunity to teach. And sometimes, especially if we're tired or whatever, it's easy to go, well, it looks like you burned the rolls and the green beans are cold. Probably should have followed the way I suggested. I told you, turn that oven down and turn the heat up on the green beans, right? And I really appreciate that you brought that shame piece in, because it's tricky. And we don't realize in the moment something that seems so small and insignificant to us can be really harmful to our kids.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so we don't die on those small hills. But we have to hold firm when we're doing correcting to the things that do matter. I think respect is one of the big things that matters. Mm-hmm. We never, as our kids are exploring, we still want to make sure we have that level of respect, that we offer our children, but also receive the respect and that they're respecting others. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's okay to have that conversation with our teens. What does respect look like for you? When we're teaching them as youngsters, we tell them what respect looks like. And for our teens, it's okay for us to have that conversation and come to a level understanding of what respect looks like. Mm-hmm. And that way there's an agreement. And that's where we get to the fourth indicator of secure attachment, which is where we're helping them negotiate their needs. We negotiate our needs respectfully and with respect. And that gives us a firm opportunity to explore needs a little bit better and know what our needs are. And so having that conversation, if you're going to hold on to having your child say yes, ma'am, or yes, sir, then have that conversation with your child.
Yeah.
That's what you hope for with respect, but also be open to what they look for with respect as well. It may be as simple as knock before you come into my room. I learned that the hard way, and that could be a big opportunity for a redo by the parents.
Right.
To show respect the way that the child wants to receive respect.
So when you have a kid that comes in hot, is being disrespectful in whatever way, how do you address that through the correcting principles?
Usually I'm going to start off with, okay, I think before we get started with this, I need to meet my own needs, which is also a subversive way to meet their needs. And usually I'm going to start and go, okay, I can see you're having trouble with something right now, or you're having trouble with me. Before we get started, can I grab a snack? Do you want one too? And I try to find that mode of correction or connection first so that we're all coming in there. Because if a kid's coming in hot, usually they're dysregulated and we're at a level 3 calming engagement.
Right.
And I might teach them to do that or might give them a little bit of space. But I want to make sure that I'm not only doing that for them, but I'm doing it for myself. I need to come to a level of mindfulness to realize that there can be a whole host of things that's right. going on with that kiddo. And it doesn't all have to do with me. In fact, it usually doesn't even have to do with me, you know, when they're coming in. I heard Bessel van der Kolk say on a webinar a few months ago that the more securely attached a child is, the meaner they are to their parents. And that gives me a lot of comfort and grace when my kids are mean to me, because that means that I've done my job in building securely attached kids, but I have to expect to have that disrespect happen. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to stop and we're going to have a calming moment. And then I'm going to ask them what's going on.
Right.
And if I need to, I'm going to remind them of what our respect conversation looked like. And I might even ask the question to go, do we need to relook at what respect is? Because mm-hmm. if you're coming at me and telling me and calling me bruh, that may not be part of our respect agreement, but if my kid wants to call me bruh, and that's part of them showing respect to me and not necessarily their peers, because I'm not their peer, I'm still their parent or their caregiver
right.
or the authority figure if I'm the teacher, I'm going to have that conversation with them on what that looks like.
Yeah. So I'm sure you know you just did this, but basically we went through like how to correct disrespect, and you said to empower and connect. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just such an indication of what a natural you are, because the first thing I want to do at disrespect is start to lose my mind, because I grew up where respect was like the epitome of all things. And I think we all think that, right? Respect is just paramount to all of us in some regard. But the idea that we say part of me teaching respect is respecting you in this moment and recognizing that this isn't about me, that this is likely about something else that's gone on that I have no idea what it is. And there's a chance that physiologically you're off and I need to empower your body so that we can regulate and have a good conversation about what's going on. And it doesn't mean the conversation won't be hard. It's just that as the safe adult, you're saying we need to empower and connect so that we can get to regulation, so we can get to respect.
Yeah. 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 And I think that mindfulness piece is critical for parents of teens, because we're dealing with a whole different person, because that person is trying to figure out who they are. So they're going to try all the things in different strategies and different ways to figure out who they are and what's going to fit. And just because it's coming at you like this today doesn't mean it's going to look like that tomorrow.
One of the new strategies we have in our home is that, you know, and I have teenagers, is when they're dysregulated, is for me to say, do you want privacy or company or quiet company? Because sometimes they just want you nearby, but mom, I need you to stop talking. And that's a respectful way they get to answer that question in whatever the way they want. And then I know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, absolutely. And even if they come at you and say, I need you to shut up now. No, that's not respectful. But I think when we listen to the need behind the behavior, when we give them that quiet space, then have the conversation afterwards,
right?
Rather than trying to jump all over it.
Right. It's so tempting to be like, yeah, but that was rude and disrespectful. So no, I'm not going to shut up right now. I'm going to tell you everything you need to know because I'm running out of time.
Right. Absolutely. And I'll also remind parents this. Teens don't act the same way in other spaces like they act at home. So if you've got a fear that your kid is going to treat their boss the way they're treating you, you don't have to have that fear because what you've taught them is how they work with other people. So don't consider that's going to be the issue.
Right.
Their behavior with other people is going to be the indicator, not their behavior with you.
So fun. It's so fun.
Yes.
Oh, I get all the mess. Cool. But that's the role. That is our role. That is exactly what we're here to do, is to hold them in their mess and be ready.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Scott, I happen to know, because I've seen it a gazillion times now, that you were a star player in our teen camp, which resulted in our TBRI for Teens video. Do you have a favorite memory or like an aha moment that struck you during that camp that you learned in working with teens?
Yeah. And I'll preface this by saying this. I was not invited to the camp to be a buddy. I was invited to be the challenge course operator. And I was going to go up there and run the kids through the ropes course. But me and my buddy Ray, we just connected from the very get-go. And it was a beautiful relationship. He's such a wonderful young man. It just felt natural. So we just kind of rolled with it. And I became that buddy. The most aha moment I had during that camp was after the cameras were off and we were all sharing a snack after one of the evenings. And some of the kids were playing and I was playing alongside them, and the play was a little bit rough and tumble, and one of the kiddos landed on me in a not so safe touch position. Mm-hmm. And it was really awkward for both of us. And we kind of looked at each other and went, we don't want any of this. And so we stepped away from each other and kind of went on about it. But about 30 minutes later, this kiddo, started really just kind of coming at me, and they would go out, and I can't even remember who the kid was, but they would go out to their house parents, because these were kids from Methodist Children's Home, and just kind of touch base with them, and then they would come back and they would say something mean to me, very disrespectful and almost attacking. It reminded me here in Texas, we have mockingbirds that attack cats or squirrels that are attacking their nest. It felt like this kiddo was dive bombing me with disrespect. And if I was to put on my super TBRI shirt and try to go deal with this correction, I probably would have really messed up and we would have had a bad situation in our hands. But at that moment, I learned to be mindful and look out in the room and recognize that I am the target of this child's fear, this teen's fear, and I don't have to handle it right now. This kid needs to feel safe. And so I was able to look over at my buddy Jim and say, I think I'm causing a lot of fear here, and I see a whole lot of safe adults in this room, including you. I think I need to step out. So I learned the tag team system at that camp, because with teens, sometimes we are the person that they're attacking, and it's okay for us to step out, especially if we have a significant other to take over in that situation and allow that. I think it's very important for men, especially when they're trying to protect their spouses, to be the attacker once spouse tags us in. And I think it's okay for us to not be that person and be the safe person in that moment. So I learned a lot just in that little experience. And I was able to reconnect with that kid the next day. And all it took was just a simple fist bump and to look at her and say, are we cool? And the fist bump said yes. And we were done with that whole situation. Good. So that level three response looked way different than giving words or hands and eyes and doing deep breaths together. Because right. If I did that with that kiddo, it would have turned into a complete disaster.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I would like to ask you to tell one last story. We haven't talked about this, but I believe you had a passenger in your car on the way home. Is this correct? From camp?
Actually, it was in another camp. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was in yeah. Because, well, so I did get to do the challenge course with the kiddos, and you'll see them in the video. But the following summer, they invited me back to be a challenge course facilitator, and I got to do that as well. But I ended up being a buddy for a family, and that's the way it works.
Of course.
But I was the passenger because Karen Purvis was the driver. And when Karen Purvis wanted to drive, Karen Purvis drove. Right. And so on the way home from that camp, and it was a family camp where all the whole family system was together. And we stopped off for Mexican food on the way home from Brownwood, Texas, on the way to Fort Worth. And in that conversation, she asked me, if you could give the parents that we're working with anything, what would it be? And I don't even remember what I said. I just gave her some answer, but I had the wisdom and foresight to ask, what would you give them?
Right.
And of course, Karen couldn't give one thing, she gave two. And she said, if I could give parents two things, it would be a good understanding of the balance of nurture and structure and knowing how to raise them both or lower them both, specifically with each individual parent, and not be have one parent be responsible for nurture and the other be responsible for nurture. And then the other thing, and I'll never forget this one because it hits me to the core to this day. She said that every parent needs to understand and know their own preciousness. Our goal with relationships in TBRI is to help our kids see their infinite worth and see how precious that they are. And we cannot lead a child to a sense of that understanding or a sense of that healing until we've gone down that road ourselves. And so that moment just changed everything for me. And for me, that's the mindfulness piece that I take into every interaction, whether it's in counseling, with my spouse, with my boss, with my supervisees, whoever I'm working with, the kiddos that I'm seeing. I want them to leave in that moment knowing a little bit more about how precious that they are. And if it starts with me, then what the hope is that they can start to realize it for themselves and realize that they have a precious, important role in this world. So valuable and important for our teens, because the questions keep coming about who am I? What is my worth? And it's our role as caregivers, as teachers, as staff, whoever interacts with this child, that they know no matter where they land, they're valuable and precious.
The TBRI podcast is produced by the Karen Purvis Institute of Child Development at TCU. To learn more about TBRI and the resources mentioned in this episode, please visit child.tcu.edu/podcast.